Happy Thursday, everyone, on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, the most amazing Buccaneers slash Hall of Fame slash NFL podcast in the history of the free world, led by, of course, Mr. Ira Kaufman, a busy man this week. As this podcast posts, Ira is in Houston preparing to present John Lynch for the Hall of Fame for the fourth time on Saturday. A big day for Ira, but right now, as we record this, before you get on the plane, Ira, you're still here. So thanks for being here.
48 hours away, mister, and the excitement's building. Houston, here I come, and I'm not getting back on a plane to Tampa unless John Lynch is being fitted for a bust.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Ira, and your podcast first is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Definitely want to start your vehicle search, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com or at EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. And, of course, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon is Brandon's only luxury dealership. And Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, really a fantastic place just west of I-275 on Fletcher. And this is just such a great family dealership, Ira. 70-plus years of Ed Morse. They have many other dealerships across Florida, and proud that they are with us and sponsoring you. It's been, can't believe it's been more than 6 months already, seven months.
It's been a great relationship, Steve. I look forward to it growing even more in 2017. And I'm still waiting for my vehicle, Steve, but I will bring it up to you every other broadcast, not each one.
Waiting for your Cadillac. 7 months of Ed Morse, and they haven't kicked you to the curb. This might be a new record in the world of advertising. But seriously, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.
Tell the commission I'm still coming after him, Steve.
I'm
unrelenting.
Of course, Under Your Skin, Ira, is the Bucks Uncensored podcast.
I want those numbers, Steve. You keep telling me every week that the commission's dominating the top five, and I'm a little tired of it at this point.
You've been doing well, Ira. I'll have some new data for you when you return.
I like that.
When you return from the Super Bowl. Now,
we're hitting a peak this weekend, Steve. This is a big one. There's a lot of interest.
A lot going on here. Now, I have to break this to you, Ira. I told you at some point I would talk to you about this, and it's not like we have production meetings for our podcast here, but I have to throw this out at you. You know, this is the fourth time for Mr. John Lynch, which means it's your fourth time presenting him, which means what the hell are you going to do, and what's the situation if you don't get him in? If the Brian Dawkins mob, led by Peter King, is successful and gets Dawkins in as a safety and Lynch is holding the bag again, what's next?
Steve, our readers and our listeners, which are growing by the day, correct? They're not going to want to hear what I'm about to say. But in all honesty, and that's what we're all about here, I have to say it. And that is, if John Lynch does not make the class of 2017, he could be in trouble. And I'm not trying to sound an alarm here, but it could end up being one of these cases like a Jerome Bettis, a Lynn Swann, where he keeps coming back in that room, 8, 9, 10. I think Swann was 14 times. And we don't want that to happen. And the reason I say it, Steve, is, look, let's just look at the class of 2018 that's down the road, which Rondé Barber will be a first-time eligible. Well, Rondé's going to be going up against Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Brian Urlacher, Steve Hutchinson, all-decade guard for Seattle. And those are just some of the first-time eligibles, plus everybody that gets left off in the class of 2017. That's murderer's row, Steve. That's murderer's. That's a loaded class. Unless Randy Moss gets treated like Terrell Owens, and I don't think he will be. Ray Lewis is a no-brainer, certainly. Rondé's task is difficult in year one. I'm not saying Rondé's not going to get in the Hall. But what I am saying is this is the time for John Lynch. This class, this year, fourth time around, let's get him in.
Now, you mentioned previously, and you can refresh me with the actual data, Lynch's first class for the Hall of Fame, which would be 2014.
Right. 14, that was the Derrick Brooks year.
Now, every finalist other than Lynch has made the Hall, except for one other, which is Morton Anderson. Am I correct?
That is correct.
So out of those 15?
15 modern-day candidates.
in the class of 2014.
13
and John
13
Lynch.
13 have bus. 13 have bus.
John Lynch has you.
John Lynch has me. And you know what? There's growing sentiment for Morton Anderson. And I never used to take Morton Anderson that seriously. He's a kicker. That's what everybody says. He's a kicker. There's only one kicker in the hall, Jan Stenerud. Vinatieri is going to come down the pike, and he's going to get in, and he should. So here's Morton Anderson. Well, you know, Steve, he's a two-time all-decade kicker. And it doesn't matter that guys came along in the 2000s and were more accurate. You judge a guy in his time. You judge John Lynch in his time.
Sure.
And two all-decade. I mean, I used that for Warren Sapp. It was very powerful. The same guys that are sitting around this room voted Warren Sapp a two-time all-decade player. Now you're going to tell me Warren Sapp's not a Hall of Famer? I used that line in the room. It was very effective. So I think the guy that's presenting Morton Anderson can say the same thing. And maybe this is a year Morton Anderson could be a wild card, as long as he doesn't take John Lynch's spot.
All right, so let me nail you down, Ira, then, because we're hours away from the Hall of Fame vote. Who's getting in this year?
The guy that without question is getting in is LaDainian Tomlinson. Now, he's a first-time eligible, and that's the group within the group.
All right, so we got Tomlinson.
And then you look at the other first-time eligibles. Now, I'm not saying these guys are getting in. I'm just giving you some names. Brian Dawkins, Jason Taylor, Alan Faneca. These are guys that are probably going to have to wait their turn. They're probably going to have to wait their turn. And that, then you get directed towards the guys that made the final 10 last year that didn't make the final five. John Lynch is part of that group. Who else is in there? Joe Jacoby, one of the Hogs.
Is he in this year?
Not necessarily.
All right.
Kurt Warner.
Is he getting in?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe Warner has a firm hold on that number two spot behind Tomlinson.
So we got Kurt Warner, LaDainian Tomlinson. Who else?
And then from what I've heard from a lot of voters, the next three spots are wide open, and that's why John Lynch has a good chance.
So who's getting in?
John Lynch.
Give me a three. Lynch, all right. So you got Lynch.
I think Jacoby is getting in.
Yeah, that's the Hogs, 80s Redskins offensive
line. He would be the
line.
Second Hog. Russ Grimm's already in. And I believe this is the year that Morton Anderson gets in, especially, Steve, when I close my presentation reminding everybody in the class of 2014 is in except Anderson and Lynch. That is powerful. And that goes to, hey, this is the year for these guys.
See, Now
you don't like
that. I hate that.
You hate that.
I hate that. And that's just me. And I would, if I were in the room, Ira, I wouldn't be weird. I wouldn't say, Ira, who the hell cares who made it from 14? It's ancient history, and it's not in our bylaws to care who...
It is not in the bylaws.
Who's not in, didn't make it from a certain class. But... That said, I understand the unwritten rules of the Hall of Fame, and that's one of them, is that kind of thing matters. It's not going to get him in, but it matters.
There's a cue. There's an unofficial cue. Yes.
Yeah, unofficial this, unofficial that. So, to recap for our
you wanted my five, I gave
listeners,
to you.
Your five, LaDainian Tomlinson, Kurt Warner, John Lynch, Joe Jacoby, and Morton Anderson. Now, that means Terrell Davis, no.
Terrell Owens.
No. Now, how close was Owens last time, in your opinion? Pretty close?
Maybe not. I mean, it was his first time eligible.
That's a secret ballot.
Secret
right?
ballot. We don't know the votes. Got buried in the room. Trying to remember if he made the final 10. I don't remember if Owens made the final 10. But there were powerful arguments against Owens. And going forward, there's going to be powerful arguments against Owens again in terms of him being a lousy teammate. And nobody ever said that about Warren Sapp before people get all bent out of shape. Well, Sapp did this, Sapp did that. Nobody said Sapp wasn't a good teammate. Nobody.
And the Steelers offensive lineman is there. I forgot. What's his name?
Well, I said Alan Faneca. Yeah.
Now, he's a first-timer?
I believe he's a first-timer.
So you don't like him?
Steve, you got to remember.
You like him over Jacoby? You like Jacoby over Faneca?
Well.
Obviously.
That was an iconic group. Of the Hogs. And, Steve, they won three Super Bowls.
I know.
With three different quarterbacks.
I was alive for that one, even though you
Jacoby
were...
Jacoby left...
You had your 50th birthday party when they won their second Super Bowl.
Steve, left tackle, critical position on any offensive line. Some people suggest that Jacoby was one of the few guys, maybe the only guy, that could handle Lawrence Taylor coming off the right edge. Now... Look, I covered the Giants in the late 70s and the early 80s. I did, for United Press.
No, I know, I know.
Of course, my first year covering pro football was 79. Rookie coach named Ray Perkins and a rookie quarterback named Phil Sims. And there was Kalfman getting slapped around by both of them on a weekly basis. And, you know, the next year, Lawrence Taylor came in, 1980, second pick in the draft. Everybody knew right away after two games, this guy's extraordinary. But a lot of people think that when the Redskins played the Giants, they didn't give Jacoby any help on Lawrence Taylor. So that carries some weight. Who can block Lawrence Taylor?
Now, just to reminisce for a minute, Ira, I'll take our younger readers back, listeners back, words. Have you ever seen anybody ever like Taylor ever since? Has there ever been a player that even approached that level of dominance? The only thing I could think of is maybe, you know, Julius Peppers comes to mind in some of his early years of dominance.
Maybe if J.J. Watt didn't get hurt this year. I mean, he had a streak going. He was a one-man wrecking crew.
Yeah, Watt
and
would
let's,
fit.
Let's hope his back heals up. That Houston defense could be very formidable, Steve, because Clowney came around. They got some other pieces.
It is so formidable.
It's formidable.
It's very formidable.
So Watt, I think, is the closest I've seen. Yeah, Watt.
All right. I just had to ask you, since you are the sage of Tampa Bay sports.
There is a general sentiment, Steve, when they do these top 10 players of all time. I think Jim Brown's number one. I think most people would pick Jim Brown number one. You know, Jerry Rice is in the mix, Montana. But the first defensive player that people mention is Lawrence Taylor. He's the first defensive player.
Haven't seen him, folks, hit up YouTube, Lawrence Taylor. Enjoy yourself for half an hour. It's
absolutely
unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable stuff. All right, Ira, so that's your five. I don't think we would get that five from a lot of the Hall voters, which is interesting.
Maybe not. Now, Terrell Davis, he's a strong candidate, Steve. Tony Boselli is another first
Tony Boselli, that's right. There's an X factor for you.
It is. With the Boselli and Terrell Davis, you hear one word come into play. I don't know how you think about it. Longevity. Does it play a role? If it does, how much of a role does it play? Well, the answer to the first one is, of course it's got to play a role. Derrick Brooks did it for 14 years. Doesn't that matter? That another guy did it for five?
Of course
doesn't it
does. Of course it does.
But does it eliminate Terrell Davis and Boselli from, because these guys had basically five elite seasons.
Well, let me throw this to you. Let's say that whoever's presenting Tony Boselli, who played, what, 7 years of legitimate years?
For Jacksonville.
You know, played on playoff teams.
Stud left tackle.
Great player. Okay. If he comes with a lot of ammo, with all these guys saying this is the best left tackle in the history of the game.
Next to Anthony Munoz, maybe. Yeah.
In that class. In that class, there are very few. If he brings enough juice to that, could you be swayed? Now, I'm asking you as a voter, could you?
He would have to clearly be the best at his position, without question, when you play that short of a career. I think you got to be, without question, the best of your time. And maybe Boselli was. Maybe he was. I look at guys like Walter Jones, Jonathan Ogden, I mean, Orlando Pace. That's high cotton, Steve. High cotton to say he was better than Walter Jones. If I got the right people that played against him, like a Bruce Smith that said he was, that might have some sway.
What about peers? Let's just say, hypothetically, let's say they get in touch with Walter Jones, who says, yeah, I used to watch film of Boselli. He was better than me.
Strong stuff. I think that's the kind of stuff you have to bring to the room when you're dealing with a guy who played a short career. Now
after Steve, all this Steve, research.
Steve, hold on. One thing that's come up in the room about Terrell Davis, who was a tremendous postseason runner, maybe the best postseason runner the league's ever seen. Had a good offensive line in front of him in Denver, but he got it done. He averaged like 125 yards a game in the playoffs, and he played a lot of playoff games. Extraordinary success in the postseason. And they don't win those two Super Bowls with Elway without Terrell Davis. Key component. He was the missing
link. Absolutely.
And I've heard in that room, Steve, the name, and this might get some of our listeners ready to drop their tape recorders. But Gale Sayers' name has come up with people trying to, obviously Davis's presenter, comparing Terrell Davis to Gale Sayers. Short career. Brief. They call him the Kansas Comet. because part of the reason was he was so fast. The other reason was his career was over in a flash. With all due respect, I hate to do a line from Lloyd Benson when he was doing a debate, but where he turned to Dan Quayle and said, I knew Jack Kennedy, and you're not Jack Kennedy or whatever it was. I saw Gale Sayers, and Terrell Davis is not Gale Sayers. And neither is anybody else because, Steve, when Sayers broke in, I believe it was 65, with Dick Butkus, same draft, Sayers and Butkus. How could the Bears be so terrible for the next 5 years with those two? It's amazing. But the league had never seen anybody like Gale Sayers, Steve. They had never seen anybody like Gale Sayers at that time. And I don't think it's fair to put Davis quite at that echelon.
Well, you know the podcast is deteriorating, Ira, when Lloyd Benson shows up.
Lloyd Benson.
You know things have fallen off. Lee DeCamper, if you're missing him today, of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee is flying back from Houston, coming back from Super Bowl Media Day, all the great coverage. The Bucks-related coverage.
He's going to have a lot of stories for us next week, Steve.
He's had plenty this week, and we'll have more. I mean, a lot of great nuggets out of the Super Bowl. So many Bucks connections to the Falcons. We were able to dig up a lot of stuff there. Now, Ira, shifting gears a bit, but staying on the John Lynch topic, if you will. John Lynch, new GM of the 49ers.
Inexperienced.
Rather shocking in NFL circles, but inexperienced in the personnel matters as far as an executive, but you know, tight ties to the league in various capacities since 1993. Now, you seem to think that this might that this opens up a question for the Bucs and the Buccaneers with John Lynch getting that job. You know, I'll let you spill it since it's really your angle.
Well, Steve, I've been thinking about it for years now, and every little bit helps. And who's right in our town, Steve? Right in our town, going to work every day in the bowels of Amalie Arena in his office, trying to straighten out the Tampa Bay Storm of the Arena League, taking everything into consideration, the business side of football, the salaries, the budgets, constraints, factoring all this kind of stuff in, trying to bring in talent, hiring coaches. Our good friend, Derek Brooks, our good friend, number 55, no-brainer, first ballot Hall of Famer. I dare say you and DeCamper could have got Derek Brooks in. And that's about as blunt as I can be about that, Steve. That's
thank you, Aaron.
a guy with zero blemishes, obviously, in that Hall of Fame room. And here he is, Steve, you know, toiling for the Storm, working for the league. In some capacities.
Appeals officer.
And I just can't help but think, Steve, what it would be like to have Derek Brooks working at One Buck Place. Having said it, Steve, he wouldn't take a token job. He's got too much pride for that.
Those token jobs don't usually pay too well either.
He couldn't be, a job in name only. He wants to contribute. He loves his Buccaneers, Steve. Our listeners that hear him on Steve Dumig every week, that you could tell. He follows the Bucs closely. Steve, he talks to Buc players on a weekly basis. Current Buccaneers.
Sure.
You know that for a fact.
Yeah, I know you met with Derek recently as well. So,
I made a mistake of doing it in his office because he's got 47 different things. It's tough to tie him down for 5 or 10 minutes. He was helping me on the Lynch presentation, giving me some stuff about how Lynch had more responsibility, Steve, than anybody in that defense, including him and Warren. So I'm just trying to, imagine Brooks in the Bucs front office, Steve. The first thing that strikes me was he'd be one heck of an asset in attracting free agents. I think it would be incalculable. And some people say, well, wait a minute. Brooks hasn't played since 2008. These modern-day players, Steve, that have come along in the last 8 years, they don't know who Derek Brooks is. You know what my answer to that is? Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Everybody knows Derek Brooks. The rookie that's coming into the league next year knows Derek Brooks or of Derek Brooks. He's got an impeccable reputation, Steve, and he's got a lot of influence with young players. And I'm not saying that's the only contribution Brooks can make. I sound like Brooks' agent, and believe me, he's got a good one, Steve. But going forward, here's my little appeal to the Glazers. You know, you wanted Brooks to have some background in football operations. Well, he's got quite a background, and John Elway, I believe, took the same route. I'm not trying to nudge Jason Light out of a job, but find a place for Brooks, give him a title, and give him some real responsibility. And I think the Bucks would benefit greatly.
Yeah, it's
and Brooks, you owe me dinner next week now, Brooks. He doesn't even know I'm making this speech, but
hey, I didn't know you were making this speech, but I mean, it feels like a no-brainer, mainly because if you look at Derek Brooks, okay, he is working for the Storm. And he's done that for years. So if he's willing to work in football for a Tampa Bay team, well, why not the Bucks?
He's right here in town. He's you know, right here.
Obviously, player personnel evaluation and
who's got more respect around football than Derek Brooks?
Well,
he's on the short list.
I don't know if I mean, I agree with you with the ability, the help in attracting free agents, but I don't think that's really why free agents would come. But I'm sure could he help? Take a free agent over the top to get him here? Yeah, absolutely. No question. College free agents are guys recruited as well, undrafted free agents, which can be the core of your team. But I think that Derek Brooks' value would be in being in the organization in a personnel capacity. And
another set of eyes? Another opinion?
Yeah, an evaluator. An evaluator and somebody who, with even more training in the job in a regime that existed under Jason Light, would probably get even better than whatever he could
do
right now.
He's got a very curious mind, Steve. A very curious mind.
Yeah, look, a talented NFL executive in the making. So, sure, is that a guy you want in the organization? Yeah, how are you going to go wrong with Derek Brooks? But your point of, hey, Lynch got it. Here's Mr. Brooks hanging out down the street.
And I wouldn't like to see Brooks go to another organization, Steve. And I think, obviously, his first choice would be the Bucks, I think. And we'll see. We'll see if we can make this happen, Stephen.
It's interesting to
it's
think
interesting,
about
yes.
in the light of what John Lynch has done. And of course, he's very close with Lynch, and you don't want to see him with the Niners,
right? I don't think Brooks would want to leave the Bay Area if he had his druthers. Let's see what happens. I've been thinking about this for years, Steve, and it hasn't happened, and I have no reason to think that it will. But with the Lynch announcement, Steve, it adds another layer of intrigue to it.
Now, Ira, with the Bucks off season is here, about to kick into full swing after the Super Bowl, and we're going to talk about that. But first, I got to pin you down again because this podcast is about pinning you down. This is the Ira Kaufman podcast. We care what you think, not what I think, not what Lee thinks. This is about you, Ira. It's all about you. Everything's about you. Super Bowl is in a few days. Falcons, Patriots, give me a score, give me a reason, give me a why, give me a what. What's going on?
First thing I'll say is this. Falcons are going to score their points. They're going to score their points.
How many?
They get 24.
So they're not going to score their points. Well, they score 30, 35 a game.
Steve, you're playing the number one scoring defense.
So don't tell me they're going to get their points.
Well, 24 is not a bad Super Bowl score. Wins the game.
That's not their game. All right. 24.
Haven't said that. This is about history. This is about history. Falcons coming around as first, haven't been there in a while, and they'll have their day. But it's all about history now for New England. 2 weeks to prepare for the great game planner, the ultimate game planner in Belichick, Steve. I don't know how they do it. I mean, I really don't know how New England does it, Steve, because this is the great fallacy. People say, look at all the weapons Brady has. Look at this. Look at that. That's all nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. It's rubbish. People, Chris Hogan, they're making Chris Hogan out like he's Antonio Brown. Steve, this is the way they do it in New England. The names don't matter almost. I mean, what a system machine this has been. Now, obviously, Brady is an all-timer. In my opinion, and I've said this before on some radio broadcasts.
You've said it here, too.
He's the best. I didn't see Otto Graham, no matter what you say about my age. But I'm talking about modern-day football. I think he's gone past Montana, Steve.
Did you go to high school with Otto Graham?
Steve, this is history. This would be a fifth Super Bowl win for Belichick, Brady, the Patriots, all since 2001. I mean, extraordinary. Twice they've lost in the Super Bowl by miraculous last-minute finishes by the Giants. So they could be going, you know, very realistically for number seven. Forget about number five. I can't go against the Pats. Now, I think the odds makers are showing tremendous respect for Atlanta. I mean, this is a team that was 16-point favorites against Houston a few weeks ago. Granted, the game was at Gillette Stadium, and granted, you know, the Texans are not the Falcons. But it was a 16-point spread, Steve. This one is 3 or 4. Very competitive. And
so I'm
going with New England.
How many points for New England?
I Falcons, think 30.
30-24 New England.
30-24 New England. Brady has his day. And I want to say this, Steve, and I've been very consistent about this. You know, these people are saying Brady is driven by Goodell's suspension. This is a driving force. He thinks about it day and night. This is, again, rubbish. Absolute rubbish. You're talking about Tom Brady. Steve, his focus never changes. It never changes. He could be playing the Bucs on September 16th. He approaches it the same way. He wants to kill him. He's a killer. He's Michael Jordan, Serena. That's what Larry Bird. That's what these people do, Steve. He's in that class.
He's Serena.
He doesn't need it. You don't think you think Tom Brady needs extra motivation going into a Super Bowl?
No, I think it's stupid. Sure. It's stupid.
Everybody can't wait, you know. What's Goodell going to do if he presents it to What do you mean, what is he going to do? He's going to present it. He's going to congratulate the Patriots.
Oh, I'm not worried about Goodell, but I hope Brady, you know, for the entertainment value, I hope Brady has something to say.
Absolutely.
I mean, that would just be icing on the cake, but, you know, it will be.
And I'm not a Brady apologist either, Steve, because he didn't cooperate with that NFL investigation. I got a problem with that.
The whole thing was messy. Both sides, messy.
They might not have had the smoking gun, but they had a lot of evidence that he was guilty.
They had a lot, but it's just so messy on both sides. It just turned me off. Another thing that I think the NFL suffered a little bit from.
I think so.
They don't want to admit that, but
Goodell wouldn't
so.
Let it go when he probably should have.
Now, Ira, are you willing to wager with me on this podcast, on your podcast?
I believe I am.
What's your max stakes here?
You mean you're taking the Falcons straight up? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, because you've got Patriots 30 and Falcons 24. I'm going to go with Falcons 33, Patriots 28.
Wow.
So what are we looking at? Are we looking at
two lunches? Escalade.
Two lunches? Escalade.
Perhaps an escalade. two lunches?
Two lunches?
Dinner. Dinner.
Dinner.
Dinner. Dinner in Tampa.
Dinner in Tampa.
And I don't mean Burns. Don't even get any ideas about that. I know a diner on Northdale Mabry that would suit us fine. You can get your chicken and dumplings, and I'll spring for it.
$5.99 on a Monday night. Monday night's Blue Plate.
It's a special, yeah, Blue Plate.
All right, how about a decent dinner?
Yeah. You sound like a Seinfeld episode with Mendy. A soup a meal? Yeah, soup's a meal. There you go.
All right, so excellent. It's on the record. I've got the Falcons. You know, I heard you pontificating all this stuff, history, schmistry, whatever. Patriots have lost their share of Super Bowls, which, you know, doesn't take away from them. But I think the Falcons are such a challenging team to defend with the Patriots defense that isn't necessarily great by any stretch. Great, well-coached, talented in the secondary, and they've got a lot of good things going on.
But you got to cover the whole field against Atlanta.
You got to cover everything against Atlanta. They have every element covered, and I don't think that I haven't seen any hint of slowdown in this team for a long time, and they've come across some excellent defenses, and they're just playing confident. And I don't think Matt Ryan's a guy whose eyes are going to be deer in the headlights.
You think
in a
this
Super
is
Bowl.
Ryan's year? Ryan's year. It's hard to argue against.
No, I just think that right now, they're not a team that the Patriots are going to slow down enough to get it done. And Dan Quinn has been in this situation before as a guy designing a defense against the Super Bowl. Against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I don't think it's too big for the organization.
Steve, all year you've been right on with the Falcons.
Well, I got, you know,
you've
I got
been
to,
right on.
I got to ride them home. I'm on secretariat here.
I told you after week one, you know, the Bucs just beat a team that's going to finish 6-10. I mean, I said it. I was dead wrong. Absolutely dead wrong. Quinn did a fantastic job. And I got to tell you, in retrospect, I talked to Rich McKay that week after the Bucs' victory.
Is there anybody you don't talk to?
Ah, come on. And he goes, I'm not worried. We're going to bounce back strong. This is a very, very tight room we have. Very, very tight. Camaraderie is off the charts. Quinn's done a fantastic job in promoting teamwork. Turns out McKay was right. They shook off the Buck loss at home to a division team. I mean, that's tough. That's tough to take in week one, Steve.
And Ira, the last reason that I can say the Falcons are going to win, because every Buccaneers fan listening knows the Bucs are the ultimate soap opera team. And what better soap opera finish than to have the team winning the Super Bowl be the same team who fired your head coach and your defensive coordinator 2 years ago? I mean, the poet.
You love that. You
that's
absolutely
just,
love
that's
that.
That's stunning. Only in Tampa does this stuff happen.
And by the way, Steve, can we mention that for the second year in a row, an NFC South team is in the Super Bowl representing the conference? That's not too shabby.
No, it says a lot. And now every quarterback in the NFC South, except for Jameis, will have played in a Super Bowl. I mean, and
His day's coming.
A Super Bowl prediction by Mr. Kaufman.
Well, I didn't say when. And it could be when he's in a San Francisco uniform.
Your day's coming too, Kaufman. Your day's coming too. All right. You know, Ira, and your podcast presented by Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa. It's where I start my search, edmoorescadillactampa.com. I look at their pre-owned. Look at all the great lease deals. Right now, all the new February offers are coming. You definitely want to keep visiting edmoorescadillactampa.com to find them, as well as edmoorescadillacbrandon.com. So we'll have more exciting news on the new February offers next week.
Steve, the next time we're doing a podcast, we will know what happened in that room on the day before the Super Bowl, and I will be giving you a total behind-the-scenes look at what went down.
And a little sneak peek, possibly, if you do get Lynch in, possibly we're going to have a victory luncheon in your honor, Ira Kaufman victory luncheon, and members of the podcast can RSVP and come on out. We'll limit it to whatever we limit to, maybe a dozen listeners. Come out for a free victory luncheon to toast the custodian for his victory.
Wow, this is largesse I am not used to from JoeBucksFan.com, Steven.
And
some pizza?
Are you up for that?
Oh,
I can't feed good listeners pizza. What is this?
Well, wait a minute. What kind of spread are we talking about here, Steve?
We'll either head over to Abe's Place or to Hooters and to those who support us.
How are you gonna pick the listeners, Steven? You got thousands. This broadcast growing by the day.
Well, we may have thousands, but very few are going to want to actually meet you in person.
I see.
I'm just teasing you. No, we'll just put it out there and first 12 in that RSVP, something like
very
that.
Very nice.
And we'll,
that gives me even more incentive to get this close this deal on Saturday.
Hey, if anything could get you to close the deal, it's a free lunch. No question about that. Free lunch for Mr. Kaufman. Now, we still are in the midst of Bucks preseason right now, Ira. As we sit here this Thursday, the podcast launches 35 days from the free agency bell going ring-a-ding-ding. That is very close. And we know the Bucks have to spend money. One, they're way under the salary cap. Two, they got needs. Three, they're 9-7. And they got all these excellent teams in the division. I don't think anyone would argue going into next year that this is the toughest division in football, including the Bucs.
Carolina's going to bounce back, Steve. We know that.
Yeah, they should bounce back. The Saints should be better.
And Atlanta's not going anywhere.
Atlanta, Super Bowl defending team, and the Bucs 9-7. I mean, that's, with an emerging situation. Now, Ira,
I'll cut you off right here.
Please do.
Yes, they will be active. And yes, they will be strategic. You hate that word, Isvitz. You want a firestorm. You want to dump $60 million on the free agent market. They will be strategic.
Strategic,
Steve.
You know what strategic stands for? Strategic stands for some politically correct baloney that means they're not going to buy a bunch of expensive players because they don't want to. And I don't agree. Strategic means you get the best fits, period.
I think they're going to go for the most part, for the $5 or $6 million player that fills a
specific
need.
I don't believe it.
And you don't like it.
I know, I don't believe it.
All right.
Who, what brain dead general manager, let me just put it out there, Ira, goes into free agency and says, well, we're going to limit ourselves because we have some sort of plan in play. No, you look at, you evaluate all the players.
That's what they're doing right now.
The super expensive ones, the $6-8 million, the Brent Grimes guys, the other ones, and you pick some of them and you target and you try to get
what you can get. I think they'll hit one $10 or $12 million player. If my money's on Calais Campbell right now, and that's a big move. That's a big move. And then I think they'll get some complimentary players. You don't like that word either.
No, I like that word a lot.
You don't like strategic.
Stop. I like complimentary. And
they will turn their focus to the draft where it should be. Have you never learned your lesson about free agency, Mr. Isbitz? How many times do we have to go through this?
What
you
lesson?
You can't make those your core players.
Who says core players?
Core players, baby.
There is nothing wrong.
You want Peterson. You want Campbell. You want DeSean Jackson. Is there no end to your greed, Mr. Isbitz?
Look, Peterson's not a free agent, so let's cross him off. He's an X-factor wild card, unique situation if it comes about. But Tony Dungy himself, Ira, you had breakfast with Tony Dungy. You paid the bill. I don't know what you were thinking. You paid the bill, and I'm going to end up paying for that in my dinner when I beat you on the Super Bowl bet. So you pay the bill, and Tony Dungy sits there and tells you, the Bucks just need to add one more big impact player on either side of the ball. But you want to be strategic. You know, if that guy costs too much, the fans can wait.
You can't get an impact player in the first round of the NFL draft? I mean, if you do your homework, can you?
Well, you got to do some good homework.
Don't you have any faith in Mr. Light and his staff? Mr. Spytek? Are you casting down on Mr. Spytek?
It's a good point, obviously. It's a good point. I'm not going to debate the point with you there. That you can do this through the draft with at least one player. All I'm saying
is
that...
Your point is you don't know who's going to be sitting there. And that's fair.
They've got all the money to spend for a reason. There's a reason there's $63 million under the cap and more to come, most likely. So you know what? You can afford two players. Get the best two you can. What's the worst that'll happen? Team Glazer cries because they missed out on $8 million?
Plus, you want, don't forget the kicker you want that's going to cost $8 million. You want a new kicker in town. Steve,
the nice thing is you don't need to spend anything for a good kicker.
Steve, you're getting wide-eyed about the free agent market a little bit. And let's be honest, the Bucks' recent history with free agency is not stunning.
It's ancient history, Ira. It's a new season, 2017, 9-7. Dirk Cutter, the coaches
doesn't
back.
Doesn't the ghost of Anthony Collins haunt you?
Never.
Michael Johnson?
No. Well, that haunts everybody. That haunts every Bucks fan, but. No, seriously. In all seriousness, free agents. They're going to be active because they have money to spend, and they have a fan base that demands it.
And they have needs.
They have a division that demands it. They've got needs. And, do I really think they're going to go hog wild, as you wrote? No. But, you get a Calais Campbell, if he's a guy that solidifies a lot and it's such a critical position on the D-line, maybe even preserves Gerald McCoy a little bit. If McCoy doesn't have to play 94% of the snaps, he can cut back to 80 or something.
And at that point, the snaps he does play is more effective.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to get him a little bit, shave a little bit off him to keep him more ready for the playoffs, which they get there.
Wow, look at you.
Well, this is one thing. I didn't write about it yet, but it doesn't matter. I had spent a lot of time with Mike Evans at the Pro Bowl, and one of the things Evans talked about working on this offseason, he said the word several times, durability. That's his focus for the offseason, is getting more durable. And that really stuck in my head.
Does he think he wasn't that strong in December?
Well, that...
Because he didn't finish that strong. He didn't.
That's the thing. It's very rare for a 23-year-old guy to be talking about durability after he just played a season. Now, that leads me to... I didn't ask him. I didn't ask him, Ira. I thought about it, and I'm like, I should have, but I didn't. But my gut was that, he felt like he wasn't as durable as he should have been. And he talked about the mindset of knowing that, man, I need to be able to play 2-3 more games, and we have to go into that with that mindset physically, and he wants to be more durable. That's a goal of his. Now, lo and behold, he tweaks something and doesn't play very much at the Pro Bowl. It sort of rang true on Sunday night at the Pro Bowl. But the durability thing is an issue when you start to think about being a playoff team.
It's unusual for a player that young to talk about that.
Very unusual. Something to think about, but that's a focus of his, and I'm sure he's going to do it. But we'll see. We'll get more into the players and some of the targets They got to spend some money. You know, the Glazers, they want to win. This is a, and we're going to talk more about this as we get closer.
Some people think that's an open question. I don't think it is.
I think they want to win more than ever. More than ever. I mean,
they've made some mistakes.
They've made mistakes. 20-plus years as owners now. 20-plus years. The Suns, obviously Malcolm has passed away, but the Suns, Brian, Joel, Ed, they have been 20 years. They know the business inside now.
They don't miss a road game, Steve. They don't miss a road game.
They go to every game.
They go.
Very dedicated. They've learned from a lot of mistakes. They've learned from a lot of successes.
I think that's when we'll know that the interest is waning. Is when they don't show up at on the road games. I mean, that'll be a key indicator. I don't think it's going to happen.
You would think it. I mean, you would think it would be an indicator, but this is not an old ownership group. This is a vibrant, young, experienced ownership group that's very hungry to win, and I don't see them for a second wanting to hold back. They haven't showed a desire to hold back in years.
The bar has been set high now, and
yep.
Cutter embraces that, and I think that's the Cutter's credit.
2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, they spent money in all of those years. And that so basically all this stuff, it's a new era of Buccaneers ownership. And now you got Cutter, who's pushing the envelope. They just paid Mike Smith to lock him in as a coordinator. Interesting times. All right, any parting shots?
I can't wait for our next podcast, Steve, because
bring it home, Ira.
Hopefully I'll have something to crow about.
Bring it home. You can harass Ira. Send him some love at twitter.com/iKaufman76.
And I'm already thinking about that dinner. You already got me thinking about it.
So we got our Super Bowl bet. We've got our likely Hall of Fame victory lunch. And you got a lot on the table there, Mr. Kaufman.
I'm one determined camper, my friend.
Don't screw this up, Kaufman.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, Ira, good luck. Safe travels, and we will see you next time. Hopefully carrying the victory jewels for the Tampa Bay area.